This is TSFPN.com, the Sci-Fi Podcast Network, out of this world entertainment. It's Friday, July 8th, and this is Episode 7 of The Secrets. Welcome to this podcast of The Secrets, the podcast for anyone who is serious about writing. The Secrets home can be found at www.stormwolf.com. For the next 15 minutes, we'll talk about writing and how to get you even closer to seeing your name on the spine of a book. I'm Michael A. Stackpole, and your host here on The Secrets. Very glad to be back after a week off, because I was actually editing a novel, which is kind of the tough stuff to do when you're a writer. And I was off at a convention, Origins, which is a big war game convention, and I got a couple of interviews. Unfortunately, the interview with Harry Turtledove didn't seem to survive the flight home. The mini disc got a little tricky. And then I got back home and just doing studio design, trying to make sure that all this equipment works, and having construction outside, so that cuts down when I can do shows. And then having to be a network executive gets to be kind of weird, too. As you heard at the top of the show, we're part of the Sci-Fi Podcast Network. I invite all of you to come over to tsfpn.com and see all the different programs we have for you there. The first segment of the show, as always, is going to be covering one of the rules of writing. This show is an outgrowth of my writing newsletter, The Secrets, which you can find more about at www.stormwolf.com. So go there, get some sample issues, and see if this will help you in your writing career. The rule we got today is rule number 7, and is actually one of my favorite rules, and one of the most important rules there actually is, in terms of your being a writer. That rule is, write it before you rewrite it. And this is vitally important. When you're a writer, I have just tons of situations where people come up to me and they say, you know, I've been working on a novel, and I've got the first chapter down, and the first chapter is absolutely perfect. I have worked it over, I've done it 24 times, and it is perfect. Well, think about this. There is no Pulitzer Prize for chapters. There is no Nobel Prize for chapters. In fact, there's no real market for chapters. No one goes door to door asking you if you've got a novel and got a perfect chapter. What they want to know is, do you have a book? And the trick of it is this. You can do one chapter 24 times, and you may have a perfect chapter. But if you do 24 chapters once each, you're a lot closer to having a finished novel. And the reason this is important is very simple. There are problems that novelists face that chapterists never will face. There are things you learn in writing a novel that will help you be able to complete a novel, and will help you go back and transform that perfect first chapter into the perfect first chapter of a novel, which is ultimately what you want. And in a future podcast, we'll be able to talk about how you set up first lines for novels and how you make them absolutely perfect. A lot of times, people who are especially in the science fiction field will quote Robert Heinlein as saying, refrain from rewriting except to editorial order. And they'll use this as an excuse to never do any edits and never do any rewrites, which is really fairly sloppy and not a good way to learn how to write. What they don't realize is that Heinlein continued that quote, and he said, this does not mean you should not do another draft whenever necessary. It means that once you've told your story as well and as clearly as you possibly can, don't play around with it, making unnecessary changes, except when an editor will insist on and pay you for making those changes. So what Heinlein was saying is, do whatever you have to make it the best story you can. One of the other reasons why it's absolutely vital that you write before you rewrite is that the changes that happen in the story as you get to know your characters better can be huge. Now, a lot of people will say, well, look, I started my novel and I got to chapter 7, and in chapter 7 I realized that though I had my hero being an orphan, as of chapter 7, it was really necessary for him to have a parent who was in a nursing home, someone that he could be devoted to, which gives him a nice balance to his life, because in his regular life, he's a hard-boiled cop, but then he's got this parent with whom he's gentle, and maybe the parent has Alzheimer's and doesn't remember things, but maybe the parent was a cop and will occasionally remember things from 30 or 40 years ago, which help him on a current case. That could be actually a kind of amusing gimmick. What do you do then? Because I've got 6 chapters in this book where I don't have a parent. Well, I'll tell you exactly what I do and what all good writers do. From the beginning of chapter 7, you write that book as if the parent was there the whole time. And on your manuscript, on the first page, you write a little note to yourself, in rewrite, add dad. Why do you do that instead of rewriting it immediately? Because what you learn in writing the book from chapter 7 on is if dad was there, and the relationship you establish between the two characters in that later writing is going to be exactly what you turn around and bring back to the writing of the parent in the front half of that book. In other words, all the thinking you would have to do and all the presupposing and guessing you would have to do to go through and rewrite those first 6 chapters, and frankly all the time you'd waste, just to put in little hints, a sentence here, a sentence there, about the parent, is stuff you will be better able to do further down the line, and you'll know more about the parent, so the clues will be more relevant. In short, what you learn in the latter half of that book would cause you to rewrite all the changes you were going to make to accommodate the parent anyway. So save yourself that work. Just mark the note down, and then go back and do it all in one lump. So this is a very important rule, and it's a rule that will get you closer to being published than most anybody else. And that is, or than most anyone else will actually ever get. And that is, write the book, finish it, make it the best you can, and then go back and rewrite and make it even better. And it's that process, it's a process of rewriting, which ends up being a process of laminating and layering things, that's going to make your book really cool. So rule 7, write before you rewrite. That's what professional writers do. That's what's going to get you sales.
Hi, this is Scott Fletcher from Podcheck Weekly Review at podcheck.com. And you're listening to one of the most informative podcasts for authors in the entire podcastosphere. This is the Secrets Podcast with your host, Michael Stackpole. Go vote for him at podcastalley.com. Spread the word, baby. The Secrets. Ooh, the Secrets. Ooh, the Secrets. So, Michael, email me back. I got this great idea for this erotic sci-fi book. Although, Michael, why aren't you emailing me back, man? Nobody's returning my calls. What?
Yeah, Scott, I would have called, but I didn't want to wake your baby. Yeah, that's it. Didn't want to wake the child. Great idea for a novel, though. I will talk later. One of the things that I normally try and do here in segment 2 is to deal with listeners' letters and questions that you have. But in the wake of world events like Scott and his family having a new child, or just yesterday the bomb blasts in London, a really important issue came forward to me. And that is, what do you do if you're writing and real world events begin to interfere in your life? I mean, what we do when we write is we deal a lot with emotions, we deal a lot with thoughts, and sometimes there's turmoil that's going on in your real life, or there's very joyous things that are going on in your real life, or things that go on in the world that can make doing what you do kind of different, difficult. It can also make it very different. As a writer, you have the luxury sometimes to be able to deal with these emotions in a creative way and a constructive way that can help others deal with things. Sometimes writing can be cathartic. You literally can write the demons out. One of the best stories that I ever wrote was a story called Least of My Brethren, which was set in a science fiction universe that I've been calling Purgatory Station. It's my own little universe. And I wrote the story after dealing with having to put a dog down. And we had a dog who had a fast-growing throat cancer and had to be put to sleep. And that was a very traumatic and emotional event. And part of what I was trying to deal with was the whole idea that animals don't have souls, so animals can't go to heaven. And this dog was a very, very sweet dog. And so it's kind of hard to imagine heaven not having animals like this there. Yet, I didn't really want to write a story about somebody who was upset about the fact that his dog couldn't go to heaven. Instead, I decided to write a story talking about the nature of the soul and whether or not creatures that are not human can have souls. It's a question that we all get to wrestle with. And so I wrote a story that dealt with that. And certainly not in the very direct way, again, that the personal experience would have, but I managed to use science fiction as an allegory. A lot of people do write just for themselves. They write to exercise their own demons, they write to explore things, It's very cool that they do write to explore things and that they write for themselves. But having written for themselves, that doesn't necessarily mean that the work is then going to be acceptable to others or of interest to others. And you need to bear that in mind. All too often, there are many people that claim that they are artists, that they are misunderstood because other people don't get what they're doing. It doesn't mean the fault lies with the readers. Sometimes it lies with the artist who is trying to turn the work out, who isn't turning out something which is understandable to the vast majority of individuals. It's a hard thing for us to deal with. When you're faced with overwhelming emotions, it's okay to write them out. It's okay to explore them through fiction. But you also have to understand that most people come to fiction to escape a lot of things. And while they're willing to go along on a roller coaster ride to try and get that sense of exploration through others, of their experiences, and to learn from those experiences, and to vicariously live through the characters, and a lot of times they don't want that Sturm und Drang, and they don't want all of those horrible things that we face. So you have to be really careful. I do know that something like 9/11, for example, I had written a detective novel before 9/11, set in the world before 9/11, and it was at my agent when 9/11 happened. And my agent sent it back. He had some constructive notes on it, and I realized that now I had to go through, because we were in the post-9/11 world, and include some references to 9/11, and that was kind of weird. Now, if I were to rewrite that book today, which I may in fact have to do, and set it post-9/11, I might actually delete some of those references and have to put other references in of things that are far more important or have got far greater cultural value. So this is something to look at, something to play with. You shouldn't always wear your emotions on your sleeve. And be aware that stories, you do want emotional content, they should have emotional content, but you want to make sure that you're not just dumping things out there and forcing other people to be taking on your emotional content. You want them to be able to feel, you want them to understand that you understand the human condition. You understand what's going on out there, and this is your take on it. You provide them a different perspective. You provide them a way to cope, as opposed to just asking them to read through and endure your exercise in coping. Welcome back to the third segment, and as always, I've got some weird term or something like that to excite your ideas and maybe rescue from obscurity. The term today comes from the medieval word book by Madeline Pellner Cosman. And the word is transitum, T-R-A-N-S-I, and then tomb, T-O-M-B. We've all seen them in the movies. This is a sarcophagus that has a raised carving of the person who's dead inside there. And she notes that it's topped by a carved portrait of a corpse in a state ranging from repulsive skeletal decay to peaceful repose. Important as memento mori, early transi appealed to the living to pray for the souls of the dead. Later, transi became dramatic symbols for the wealthy and powerful, as death resolved all conflict between pride, humility, earthly wealth, and holy poverty. It's very cool to be able to use these in stories. It reminds us that people have gone before. It does remind us of power. So it's something to think about. How do the people in your world, how do they deal with the dead? How do they deal with venerating the dead, respecting the dead? Do they worship ancestors? Is it important? Is this something you get to look forward to? Transitombs are always something I've found to be really interesting, and readers of my work know that because they see scenes in tombs and mausoleums where these things actually exist. I like it. It's colorful. Use it. Give your world some depth. I have a couple of notes before we get to all that boring legal stuff. The story I mentioned, Least of My Brethren, is available in the anthology Soul's Children, which was edited by Gene Raby. I'd like you all to go over to podcheck.com, where Scott Fletcher has got his show, The Weekly Review, which is absolutely great and funny, and go over to Podcast Alley and vote for Scott, too. It'd be a nice thing for his newborn daughter to see his show rocket to the top of their charts. And I just want to remind you, this is the audio version of The Secrets, which is my writing newsletter. Go to stormwolf.com to find out more about it and subscribe to it. Right now, we're in the midst of our world-building series. This podcast is copyright 2005 by Michael A. Stackpole. I wish you all good luck with your writing, and I'll see you in a week.